Ladies and gentlemen, it's a Mean Green Nation podcast on a beautiful morning, actually here in San Antonio, where Mean Green headquarters is located, Mean Green Nation headquarters is located. It's a rainy day, but it looks beautiful to me because every morning is beautiful after a Mean Green win. I don't know if you feel the same, Mr. Billy Sierra, the great Billy Sierra. Can we call you the great? Do you feel great this morning?
I feel great. I guess great being a present feeling kind of adjective, not necessarily just a constant adjective of myself. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I feel great right now.
That's good.
So that works.
Yeah, that works. I don't know if this is the best win in North Texas history, but it sure felt like it. And I think a reasonable argument can be made that it is the greatest win in North Texas history, at least the one that we remember, right? In recent memory, if you grab the average fan, the median North Texas fan, and say, hey, what's the greatest win that you've had? And, you know, I don't know what they'd say, actually, because there haven't been a whole lot of wins, right? And I think the numbers that they posted, hey, it's the first win over an SEC team since the 70s, the first win over a P5 team since the 90s, the first win on the road against a P5 team since the 90s, et cetera, et cetera. Those numbers just tell you what you already feel, right? Which is like, man, North Texas really hasn't done this in forever. So I don't know, like, what were your emotions yesterday as we were taking Arkansas to the woodshed?
I think the consensus was that this was an exploitable team, a team that we knew that going in. I mean, last week a G5 team beat them in Colorado State, so we knew they were susceptible. And then there was no doubt that we were playing extraordinarily well, and not just we weren't just playing well, but everything had kind of built to this point in the Luttrell era, between kind of the recruiting, between the depth that's been built up, and just kind of the experience. I mean, a lot of guys out there have been kind of key guys since the year one of the Luttrell era. You know, EJ Agia, Rod Young, Brandon Garner, and I'm just saying the defensive guys. That doesn't even include, you know, Fine, Bussey, a few of the guys on the line like Woodworth and Sasai Mose. So I mean, I could list players, you know, for a few minutes here, but the point is that, like I said, it's kind of built to this point, and it just felt like this was kind of the next step, and it seemed like a pretty natural progression from 5 wins to 9 wins to now you're competing to kind of be one of those top-tier G5 teams. And a top-tier G5 team should be able to take down a lower-tier P5 school. Arkansas is that right now, not necessarily every year. But just the way they did it was obviously very impressive, particularly from the defensive standpoint. And, you know, if you're listening and you read any of Adam's stuff, you kind of realize that the offense, it wasn't just this shining performance from them, but they did what they needed. And the defense was the one that, and the special teams was really what made this such a disparaging blowout.
So you made a couple great points there. Not least of which was saying that, I've been pointing out some things. I like when people talk about me. No, I'm kidding. A couple things there. Yes. Yeah, you're right. This has been building. This is not just just random kind of thing, which I think lends itself to surprise. If we did this in 2015, right, or even a little bit 2016, went up to Iowa and beat Iowa, that would have been more surprising and a little bit more out of character. And I think most importantly, less replicable. Like, we wouldn't be able to say, well, where was that team that beat up on Iowa? How come they're not out here beating up on, you know, FAU? What's the deal? This team, it was expected, right? I think for us, for a lot of people, that change from turning into a team that's always an underdog and a team that nobody expects anything out of into a team that is expected to win these, right? Everybody was kind of feeling a little weird about CBS Sports or ESPN, everybody saying, hey, North Texas, that's my upset special. You know, that Mason Fine kid, he's really great. He's doing some great stuff. That was weird. You're like, oh, don't talk. It makes me feel weird. I'm not used to being in this position where North Texas is not the team that's supposed to go over there and upset, even though we want to be that team, right? It's a weird transition. Nobody's really familiar with those feelings. And I think some people after the game are still like, wow, that's amazing. It's a great feeling. I felt good about that. I felt good about the game, but I gotta say that I thought it could have been better. It could have been. They could have. All season so far, what we've noticed is that the offense hasn't been perfect, or at least even to the level they were last year, where they were scoring on some of these drives there. They didn't complete some of them. I don't know, Mason Flynn and Seth Littrell, Graham Harrell will say, yeah, we played well, but we only had 300 yards of offense. Yeah, we played well, but we left points on the table. We could have beat them, you know, we could have had 50 or 60 out there. And that is the next step. That's the evolution from the same old North Texas, little old North Texas out here, and a top-tier G5 team, as you mentioned, right? I say this all the time when I'm talking about Conference USA. The last couple of years, Western Kentucky was going to, like, you know, I think it was like Vanderbilt or something like that, and we're like, hey, if we want Conference USA to be respected, we need our best teams to go play these mediocre to lower-tier P5 teams and beat them down and take care of business. We need Middle Tennessee to beat Vanderbilt every season, you know what I mean? Because Middle Tennessee is supposedly one of our better teams. So, yeah, this was great. It's a momentous occasion, but it was expected, you know? That's weird to say, even though I just laid out why it was not weird to say, but it's still a little weird to say.
Yeah, it was expected, but it was also, I mean, like you said, this was huge that UNT actually did it, because you know, you look at Florida Atlantic just completely laying an egg at the beginning of the year against Oklahoma. That was kind of supposed to be kind of our bell cow coming into the year for Conference USA, yep, or at least was seen as. And then Middle Tennessee, just like you said, that's a team that has won a lot of games over the years. But they just couldn't pull it off against teams that were conceivably beatable, SEC teams. Yeah, like Vanderbilt, same with Western Kentucky. Just to actually pull this one off and do it the way we did it. I mean, this is the kind of win that Conference USA has really been looking for. Not just our best team squeaks by against the worst team in the SEC. yeah. No, our best team completely floors an SEC team. So that was huge from that regard. But, you know, I think going forward, North Texas is going to have still some more of these opportunities. So if the program continues the way it is, you know, this is hopefully not the last time we see this. You know, you look down on the schedule, you see teams like Cal and Memphis, who's obviously not a P5, but still a pretty good program, Texas mm-hmm. Tech. So there's still A&M even. There's still going to be more chances for this. So that's promising going forward that this team will have players who've kind of done this before.
I think I agree with everything that you said there. And, I mean, I think circumstances also align for this team right now. In your third year, I think you should be complete. This is just generically. You can apply this generically to any team. In your third season building a program, I think that's when you can say should, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, you say, you know, maybe, and then you say could in your second year, and then you say should in your third year, and then you say there's another should in your senior year, but senior years are always kind of weird. But third year, fourth year, those are the times you need to be competing. And last year, we were a little ahead of schedule going to the conference title game. That was all great. And I think we all had the feeling like, hey, if it doesn't work out, that's fine. We didn't expect it. This year, we came in with some expectations, and we were concerned about the defense. How's that defense going to play? Can they play well enough to give the offense a shot, a chance? Turns out they're the best unit on the field right now. And I mean, you're like, well, but Mason Flynn, 800 yards. Yeah, but they haven't been super efficient. This defense has been dominant. If you look at the Arkansas's box score, we held them to lower than North Texas season averages. That is to say that SMU and Incarnate Word played better offense than Arkansas did. This defense has been amazing. The linebackers have been amazing. I was a little concerned that both Igea and Garner got picked up a knock during the game there. What was it, like a shoulder thing for Garner? But he ended up coming back, and Igea kind of was like cramping up or something. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I mean, they just both look kind of like kind of temporary injuries. So I was hoping that would be the case. And like you said, when they went back in there, that kind of confirmed it. So, I mean, that's huge going forward, because those guys have been playing out of their minds lately.
Did you expect this from them? I know a lot of people expected a year-to-year improvement, but I didn't. I feel like they took a leap.
You know, last year, I watched every game for the most part, but I think it kind of snuck up on me how good a season that EJ Ejiha had. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at his stats at the end of the year, I was like, holy cow, this dude had like 100 tackles and six sacks as a second-level linebacker, really. And like I said, I didn't even realize that he had the season that he had until it was over. I thought he was a good player who had come along, but and I'd kind of been talking about this week on the Gomen Green Board that he's a guy who really, to me, stands out as NFL potential because he's 6'3", 231. The announcers even said it yesterday. And his production is, I think he's completely on track to be a first-team all-conference linebacker. And then it sure doesn't hurt that a couple guys have, recent guys have paved the way, like Craig Robertson and Zach Orr. So, and then to come out yesterday and put that kind of performance on film against an SEC school was really big because we only play one SEC school a year, one P5 school a year, basically. And guys who have a chance to go to the NFL, that this is the game that they really need to stand out and show that they belong. And he 100% did that. And I think he had 3 tackles for loss, a sack, 12 tackles, something like that. So, you know, his stats, it looks like they're going to speak for themselves. Then to go along with his size and the way he closes on people in the open field, I mean, his speed, he was actually recruited to North Texas as kind of like a rover type, like a safety linebacker hybrid. So speed, athleticism is not an issue at all. He's got plus size, really. And then his production is you know, very solid at this point. So I think he's really, to this point, 3 games in, put himself in a great position for first-team all-conference honors, potentially being on teams' draft boards. And then, hey, if this keeps up statistically, he is absolutely going to be in the conversation for Conference USA Defensive Player of the Year as well.
Yeah, and I think that everything that you said there is what I'm talking about when I'm saying, like, I didn't really expect any of that. You know, it snuck up on me also. He did have a great season. And I think maybe all those numbers were hidden by the fact that the defense overall was bad, right? At least, you know, numbers-wise, everybody talked about how terrible the defense was. And I think generically so. Like, they didn't really do a deep dive and say, what was it? What happened here? And I think there were some good things. I think you could see that in the defense, it wasn't all bad all the way, all the time, all the way around. The end result was bad, you know. Cortland Sutton did end up scoring 4 touchdowns in the game, but that doesn't mean the entire defense was awful. That doesn't mean that the entire defense, you know, couldn't do anything. Every single individual on the field couldn't do anything. And I think that's what happens when you see, you know, a bad team or a bad unit and everybody starts making assumptions. And I think that's what happened to Ejiha, maybe even me, even though I was paying attention, or at least I thought it was. I think this is great to see. I think a lot of us, even me included, when I wrote in the season preview, I wrote, hey, if this defense improves, and I don't know how well they can improve, I think maybe there's still a couple of recruits away, and I was thinking maybe the help would come from the new guys that signed on, right? Maybe Faison, maybe the improvement of Jamie King. I didn't know. I thought it was going to be somebody else that was on the team sheet from last year. Then somebody on the team sheet from last year. Turns out they were right there. Starting two linebackers from last season. They were the biggest improvements and so the biggest additions to this team. I've always liked Garner, by the way. I've always thought he played well. I've always thought liked his game. I think, you know, that's the terrible part about defense is that one mistake, you know, it's over. You know what I mean? Like, the guy's running for 6, and then so the whole defense looks bad. You don't see how well everybody played. All right, so what else stood out to you? Maybe the secondary. You want to talk about the secondary? They won every matchup.
Yeah, and again, I'll give another shout-out to Adam's writing on Mean Green Nation, but...
I like that guy.
But, like you said... basically, it was a lot of one-on-one matchups that we let our corners and our defensive backs, you know, basically have at it. Line them up one-on-one, let them go, and see if their guys can beat our guys. And they really couldn't. Didn't hurt either with the pressure that we were getting. But, I mean, for the most part, they were sticking with it. And you listen to the guys on coverage, they're kind of – or, sorry, the guys on the broadcast, they kept mentioning that, you know, the coverage was good. I don't remember who the color guy was. I'm guessing he was a former player, sounded like a former player. But, you know, he was commenting that, yeah, it was good coverage consistently. And, you know, Keemon Hall, Nate Brooks, they were pretty much as good as you could have expected. And Nate Brooks got burned on one play in particular where Cole Kelly threw it a little too far out of bounds, and Arkansas dude, I don't remember who it was, maybe Mike Woods, wasn't able to get a foot in bounds.
Yeah,
but really, other than that, that was really kind of the main time where they really got beat deep, and it didn't count. It was for 0 yards. So getting beat deep for 0 yards is a good outcome.
Yeah.
If that's kind of the worst performance you put on tape. But yeah, I mean, this was huge. And also the safeties, Taylor Robinson and Kyrie Muhammad are kind of more of the, or kind of some of the lesser known players on the team. Not as much of the guys you think of when you think of the North Texas defense. And for them to have a combined 3 picks, Taylor Robinson's a guy who's just kind of stuck around. He's a fourth year junior. He hasn't really played a whole lot, and he won the starting job. And when he won the starting job, I really wasn't sure what to think about that, because I was kind of thinking, well, you know, if a fourth year junior who hasn't really played is winning a job, does that mean that he's kind of getting it by default because everybody ahead of him is now gone, or is he actually earning it and kind of doing what he needs to do in practice to be a legitimate starting caliber player, not just a dude who's starting because there's no one left at that position. And you know, he looked good, and that was really nice to see him get a pick against SEC school. Kyrie Muhammad got a couple, so I mean, to see those guys playing well is really huge too, because those guys are not really our kind of leaders of the defense. So if kind of your you know, second tier starters on your defense are playing like that, and then your first tier guys are pretty much putting on a show every game, then you know that just gives you a really solid defense. I mean, your top guys are good, and your next top guys are still really good. So that was really impressive.
Yeah, I think I've always been a fan of Nate Brooks. He's always had talent, and you know, 2 seasons ago, you know, he was our number one corner, the guy that they led the broadcast about. Like, look, this kid Nate Brooks is really good out there. You gotta look out for him. And you know, he has shown the ability to play well. It was pretty disappointing to see him struggle last season. And then, you know, I think there have been a couple of features about him. Some of that was injuries. Some of that, you know, other things. But he seems back to full health this season, and you can see that he has talent. He does tend to get beat over the top a little bit, but I think that's because he's being aggressive. But you know, Keemon Hall, he was locking down Petway out there, and he has good size. Hall has good size, and so he's going to go against some of the bigger guys. And I've thought he's done a good job. He has an interception in every game this season, and he has 2 pick-sixes. And I know one came against Jerry Jones's grandson, just in mop-up duty, but a pick-six is a pick-six. You know, they still count. They go in your box score. I like if the defense can play this way. I like it. And again, we haven't played, you know, Oklahoma out here. Right? These are not, none of these teams that we played are lighting up scoreboards anywhere. SMU is still struggling to figure things out. Incarnate Word was a little overmatched. And Arkansas is, you know, they're just random pieces put together looking to form a cohesive whole. One thing that gives me encouragement is that I felt that North Texas could do something like this against SMU like 2-3 seasons ago when Chad Morris is doing the same thing at SMU. So it was frustrating to see that we didn't do it because we were so far behind, right? We're like, it's right there for the taking. How come we don't have a quarterback, right? How come we don't have this play? How come we can't just beat them? I felt like we should have won in Seth Luttrell's first season there, but we hadn't got the pass game right. We couldn't beat him. We had blown coverages. We had blown assignments, and I think it was Xavier Jones is running free. So all that was frustrating, and I think from that point, that standpoint, this win was great because it was a little revenge tour against one, beating SMU in week one, and then two, beating Chad Morris, the coach of those SMUs, to, you know, in this one, beat him at home too. God, he didn't feel good about that one, and that makes me a little more excited about anything.
Yeah, and one quick thing about Arkansas. In case anyone is kind of wondering what their what state their program's in, I think everybody knows that Chad Morris is in his first year for the most part, and then the previous coach was Brett Bielema, the former Wisconsin coach. So they went 4-8 last year, which is what prompted them to fire Bielema. But before that, they had won in 2016. They won 7 games. In 2015, they won 8 games. In 2014, they won 7. So it's not like this Arkansas team is just this, just perennial cellar dweller. They've been in bowl games. They've been, pushing, and that's in, say what you want about the SEC, but that's the toughest division in college football, the SEC West. Those players on that roster are not just, not just dudes who are just kind of used to getting their tails whipped year in and year out in the SEC. They're used to competing and against the Alabamas and LSUs, and maybe not pulling out wins against those teams, but competing with them. And so that this wasn't, I think people were maybe kind of writing off the significance of this opponent as just kind of a bad SEC team. And that's somewhat true, but at the same time, like I said, they have kind of the pedigree, and dudes on this roster have, played in bowl games, played in games where they're competing with, teams like LSU and Auburn for position in the SEC West. So this was not just a win against a Vanderbilt, for example, or a team that hasn't been to a bowl game in 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's good, and that's putting the bad team in context. Not all bad teams are the same kind of bad team. Your UTEP is a very bad team, FBS team, and, they're nowhere near what Arkansas is. I agree with everything you said there. I do think that, our strength is not necessarily our talent, even though this is the most talented and deepest North Texas roster that we've had. It still could be a little bit more improved, and it's improving, every time they get a commit. We'll talk about that in a second. But I do think that our strength is the cohesion, the coaching, and everybody being on the same page. This is the third year in the system, and everybody's fully bought in. I joked with Mason Fine at Conference USA Media Days that he sounds just like Seth Littrell. I was like, I just talked to him, and I'm talking to you, and you're saying the exact same things. I know some of these are coaching points, but you hear it all the time. They talk to Gia after the game. He sounds like, he's repeating the coaching points. Like, they all got the same talking points. But they did, and they all buy in, and they're talking like they believe it, like it's theirs, and they trust the process. That's very different than a team, we remember 2015, where half the team believes, half the team doesn't, and the rest are on the fence trying to figure out if they really want to go all in on this guy, maybe transfer something. We need to take advantage of those teams, and we did. And so on the one hand, it's expected, but on the other hand, yes, it's still impressive because that it's a talented team, and they very easily could have destroyed us, if we weren't playing, football and respecting them and all those other cliches. It's like a fine line to think we're better than the team, we can beat them, and also, hey, if we don't give them respect, we could lose very easily. But that, that's what we paid Seth Littrell $1 million a year to coach him to do, right?
Yeah, I forgot we're paying that much, but he's earning it.
Yeah, he definitely is earning it. I think that some of the national media is already doing that. Hey, look at a future P5 school guy here, Seth Littrell. You got to look at him. I've been keeping an eye on him. They haven't been keeping an eye on him. They're just saying that. But I guess before we get into the breaking news, let's just do the breaking news, right? Justin, well, this is it's late breaking news. It happened last night, but we got a recruit, right? Somebody committed.
That's right. We got a commit from Deshaun Gaddy out of Arlington Lamar, and he is a 6-foot, 170-pound cornerback. According to 24/7, he is our fourth highest rated commit according to composite ratings. And I have a good buddy of mine who I completely respect his football opinions. He's coached this guy a little bit over the summers in 7-on-7, and he is extremely high on him. He said that he is, you know, one of the best athletes he's seen out there in 7-on-7 competition, and you know, one of the best guys he's ever helped coach. But he's like I said, he's a cornerback, listed as a cornerback. He's also got film as a safety. And my buddy said he's even excelled at receiver. He could even see him playing that on the Division I level, but he's going to come here as a defensive back. And watching his highlights, he's a fast dude. He's a really good athlete. And not only that, but you know, one of the things that I can notice kind of watching a dude's highlight tapes is what does he like to do? Kind of what kind of plays is he emphasizing in his reel? What kind of plays does he prefer to show? And this dude likes to hit. He's not a big dude. He's kind of almost built a little bit like Nate Brooks. You know, 6 foot, so kind of tall ish for a corner, and then a little bit more slender, but he's absolutely willing to kind of go into that, go around the line and hit a dude. He had 10 other FBS offers. So, I mean, this was a pretty highly coveted recruit, including SMU and San Diego State, who's kind of one of the top G5 schools out there right now. So that's always a good indication. You see a team that seems to know what they're doing offering a guy. But
yeah, didn't they won yesterday, right? They got a nice win.
They beat Arizona State, yeah. Herm Edwards.
I guess so. It's a good win now, because I don't know how good they are, but...
They were 2-0. I forgot who they beat, but it was kind of, I mean, Herm Edwards was almost kind of a laughingstock this offseason because of some of the things that he said, and potentially not knowing that his school's mascot is the Sun Devils. I don't know if you heard that interview or his press conference, but
yeah, he was like, "Well, I don't know about Devils." You need to know about Devils because that's your team name. To your point, San Diego State
beat Arizona State 28-21. Sorry.
Yeah.
But you know, Deshaun Gaddy, again, he's a big commit, and he may be the last commit of this class, which if this is the class that we're going to go into signing day with and bring home, then you know, it's another indication that this program is not just not just a flash in the pan, that this is absolutely here to stay. And one of the biggest things is that if you look at this class, sorry not to hijack the football post with or football podcast with recruiting talk, but it's 54th ranked in the country and first in Conference USA. And it's one of the things that's interesting is that this class is exclusively high school players right now. And in the past, Seth Luttrell's brought in a lot of transfers and JUCO dudes. Yeah. And I thought that was interesting because at the beginning, I was kind of not sure about that. I was thinking, why do you want so many JUCO guys for year one and year two when you're going to be rebuilding? I wanted him to spend those earlier scholarship spots on guys who are going to be here for longer than 2 years. But, you know, it paid off, and it's continued to pay off. And, you know, guys like Keemon Hall and last year Eric Jenkins, and I can name other guys. But, you know, this was it's just kind of a turning point, I think, in the program with recruiting, where they're really – I guess going after high school players, going after 4-year guys, to where they feel like they've built up the roster from an upperclassman standpoint, and not just this year, but I think they feel confident in their upperclassmen next year as well. So that'll be interesting going forward. But you know, you look at this defense and how many guys to me have really excelled, and then you look at the guys who are seniors. You got Nate Brooks, Keemon Hall, Garner and Agia, and then Twalo in the middle on the line. So you've got a few seniors who are going to need to be replaced, and they don't seem too stressed about replacing those guys with you know, immediate impact JUCO or grad transfer guys. So they seem like not only are they confident with the guys who are on the field right now, but I think they're confident with the next crop who's already on campus, to where they can kind of defer to younger guys for next year.
Yeah, I wonder if we're going to get to see any of those guys. Like, I know we had one or two in the last class on the field. I expected to see more of them. I know we've seen Faison, and I think he had a QB hurry so far already. I just thought maybe we'd see a few more, but I think that kind of speaks to how well Ejia and Garner played. You made a couple good points in there. I want to go back to like specifically address this thing, because I mentioned in the preview of the Arkansas game, I was talking about the star level of like the talent level. And, you know, I also don't agree that a star rating equals you're amazing. There's a number of factors that coalesce to give you a star rating. But it's a nice shorthand to say, hey, this guy's talented, or at least was considered talented by people who are paid to determine this thing. So, you know, when I said, hey, Arkansas has 3 and 4 star guys all along the line here, you know, you can't just take them lightly. That's what I was getting at. And Patrick Cobbs made a good point also. You know, the great Patrick Cobbs. He made a good point and said, hey, it doesn't really matter what the stars say. It matters what happens on the field. And after the game, he tweeted me and said, hey, how about all those stars, right? But, yeah, I mean, I agree. I totally agreed with him. But it's just a nice way. I use the stars when I'm talking about these guys just to give you a shorthand, so I don't give you this guy's whole bio when I just want to say, hey, he's pretty good, you know. Yeah, and recruiting talk. This is the time to strike. Everybody's striking, right? Everybody, even I was saying, hey, don't forget, if you enjoy Mean Green Nation coverage, don't forget to become a member. $3 a month, $30 a year. It helps me keep the site live and not go broke. But yeah, like Ren Baker's like, hey, don't forget, come out to the game. Hey, don't forget to open your checkbook, right? It's time to donate. We can make this thing happen. This is the kind of game that he could turn and say, hey, look, I'm not just blowing smoke up your behind here. You know, I'm not just saying the same thing that every AD, you know, with the facilities to build comes over and says to you. This thing can happen. We can go to an SEC school and we can beat them there. Good things can happen here in North Texas, so please give us another $1 million, right? Now's the time to do that, because everybody's riding high off this win. And, you know, not to be the guy that looks ahead, but Liberty's very beatable. They're good, and they pose some challenges. They probably have the best offense we'll face in terms of talent plus scheme. And, you know, then there's a big matchup against Louisiana Tech. Actually, maybe the most important game, because it's a conference game. And Louisiana Tech has depth. And if they can figure out their quarterback situation, and I think they're on the way to doing that, they can pose a threat also. But two winnable games. That one's at home, you know. What does this put North Texas right here? Because, you know, 3-0 is great, but it doesn't mean anything because they're just 3-0. We're not super excited about hitting 6 anymore, right? So getting to a bowl game is kind of, yeah, it's a foregone conclusion at this point for this team this season. So what does 3-0 mean? Let's put it into context.
Well, Arkansas is probably the last game that we would, assuming a win each week, Arkansas would be the last game that we would have been underdogs in, just to put it bluntly. That's not to say that upsets can't happen, obviously. This was technically an upset from that standpoint, but yeah. You know, this, you look at the schedule and there are really zero games that you look at and you say, oh man, that's, I don't know how we're going to pull that one out. And this game had a little bit of that element, at least at the beginning of the year. And then kind of, as it's gone along, we've seen that, this was not a win that caught anybody off guard, at least not just the WL, result of this game.
Right.
But, I mean, Liberty, I think they turned a lot of people's heads that first week whenever they beat Old Dominion 52-10. And then
we realized Old Dominion is terrible, but yeah.
Yeah. And Old Dominion, I don't think anyone expected them to be this bad. They look like they're 0-3. They just lost to Charlotte, who was kind of seen as the worst team in that division. And, yeah, they look like they're in all sorts of trouble right now. But Liberty, they didn't play last week, or they didn't play yesterday. And so we'll be their first opponent in 2 weeks when we play, which can be good, can be bad. I think early in the season, I think that helps us. It, But you know, ultimately, when the game's played, I don't think that's going to be the deciding factor. I think there's way too many other things going on in this game, and I think it's another big challenge for our pass defense, because you know, going into conference play, this might be the best passing attack we see this year, possibly. And so, kind of to the last 2 weeks between going against a Chad Morris offense and then Cole Kelly. I know he played terrible yesterday, but arm talent wise, he's at 6'7". He could actually, you know, put the ball, you know, in a lot of spots that would be hard to defend. I don't know if you saw that one play where he kind of chunked it from the end zone to like the other 30.
Yeah.
You know, he has a major league arm, but between going against that, then facing Liberty on the road, this team is going to be kind of in a good shape from a pass defense standpoint, where Louisiana Tech, like you said, probably the next most daunting offense that we're going to face, and then obviously FAU at the end, but that's more from the ground standpoint. So yeah, I think 3-0 is huge, just because it puts the one P5 team on our schedule behind us, and we're still undefeated. So that, you couldn't ask for anything better than that, to have played the P5 team on your schedule and still have a zero in the loss column. So yeah, looking forward to Liberty. Like I said, it's a team that kind of likes to throw the ball around, and they've played two teams, and one team was Army, one team was Old Dominion, and Army really just gashed them, as Army likes to do, for 449 rushing yards. So it's kind of hard to gauge how Liberty defensively, in my opinion. I haven't really watched the games. I've just kind of seen highlights and stats. But you know, their quarterback Calvert has thrown for a lot of yards.
The best thing about them is that their quarterback's name is Buckshot, or at least that's like his nickname or something. His name is Buckshot Calvert. Yeah,
and yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, that's a great name to have as a quarterback. Just to jump in, I watched the Liberty and Old Dominion game, and I mean, Old Dominion has defensive talent, and so it was shocking to see them get lit up by Liberty so early. And they were riding like the wave, like, "Hey, we're officially FBS. We're at home. The crowd is crazy." I think having played at Arkansas, right, in Fayetteville, and then going to Liberty, it takes a little bit of that Liberty, like that home field advantage away from them, because they're like, "Hey, this ain't no thing, man. We played this like this already," and I think maybe Old Dominion was a little taken aback by the throng of fans there. Liberty's they're good-ish. They got a quarterback, and they got a receiver that you got to look out for. And again, there's a lot of ifs here, but if North Texas defensive line, who we haven't talked about yet, we want to mention Hambone and just the way that they were able to create pressure there. So we'll talk about them in a second. But if the defensive line can create pressure, the linebackers can continue to create havoc, right? That Bill Connolly stat of tackles for losses, sacks, and QB hurries. If they can continue to do that, I feel good about our secondary, because we have a good secondary. We have some speed in our secondary. We're not going to just get beat over the top. Hey, I also wanted to note, I think a lot of people were like, "Oh man, that Incarnate Word running back just gashes for two big long touchdowns." Well, that same dude also had a 79-yard run yesterday in his SFA game, and he had a 90-yard run against New Mexico. I think that dude is just fast, right? And you know, he's just gonna be good, that kid. So it's not a huge deal to give up a long touchdown to a really fast guy, right? It happens. But I think overall, everybody's playing well. All phases are playing well. Cole Hedlund, I think that was a question mark. He's super confident. Now, he also hasn't had any pressure kicks, right? All his kicks have come with a lead, and a comfortable lead at that. So, I mean, let's keep it that way. I don't want to make him have to kick a game-winning kick, right? It's fun and that's memorable and everything, but I think that's stressful. So let's not do that, okay? Let's never have Cole Hedlund kick a game-winning field goal, and I think we'll be fine, right? Yeah.
As long as we're ahead.
Yeah, that way, yes. Let me right, make
pressure
sure.
Pressure kicks being down by a lot. No, that's not what we want. So that, and that's not going to happen. So,
Yeah, I agree with you, dude. This is a good passing attack, but there are a lot of, they're a little air raidy. They're not like Louisiana Tech, which is spread, but they have a good running game. Like, they have Jaquizz Dancy. He's pretty good out there. UTEP's awful. Southern Miss, depending on if Jack Abraham, their transfer quarterback, is good. And, I mean, he has some talent out there at receiver. Was it Quez Watkins is pretty good. Mm-hmm. But you don't really know what Southern Miss is because...
And they just got their quarterback from last year, Quadre Griggs, back.
Yeah.
Same team.
Yeah, and last year that bad, quote-unquote, North Texas defense held them to under 50% passing, right? So, Southern Miss, they always have talent, but they're their own worst enemy, and so I don't really know how to feel about them. I'm concerned about Birmingham, Alabama Birmingham. I'm going to call them that just to get under his skin. I'm a little concerned about them just because I think they have the chip on the shoulder and a power run game, and they can control the clock. They bounced back yesterday, so I'm a little concerned about them. Rice, same kind of deal. I've made this point like everywhere I can, even on the Conference USA Report podcast. Rice was a talented team. They had some talent on their squad. I mean, they had a guy that was recruited by Michigan and I think Texas, like as a grad transfer. They have talent on their squad, and they had talent. And I think they just needed a new voice in their locker room. And they gave us a run there for a little bit last year at Rice. They had some bad losses. I'm a little concerned about Rice. They can jump up and bite us, but we should be favored. Old Dominion is terrible. FAU, the quarterback threw for 471 yards a couple weeks ago. I don't know what they did against Bethune-Cookman. I know they just handled him pretty easily.
I don't think he did very well yesterday, Robinson.
Yeah.
I think he threw a couple picks, so... He's kind of been pretty up and down,
yeah.
As one might expect from a freshman quarterback.
Yeah, that's how it goes. And then UTSA, which looked terrible. They got beat up by Kansas State, I think. And here's where you can talk about North Texas. Last year, I was giving UTSA some grief over beating a very terrible, awful, bad Baylor squad, but they just beat them like 17-3 or something like that, right? And you're like, wow, that's a good win. I think this North Texas team puts a hurting on that Baylor team of last year, right? Like, we scored like 30 or 40 on them and handles them. And that is a, like, as you mentioned, it's not like squeaking by a terrible team. We're beating terrible teams. And that's a measure, that's a lot of what a lot of the advanced stats do, like S&P plus and F plus, whatever the however you say it. They measure how good you are and how well you play against every level team. Like, if Alabama was playing this team, what would they do to them, right? That's kind of how they measured it. Alabama would destroy this team, and you beat them pretty badly. So you must be pretty good, right? So by that measure, North Texas is pretty good, and I feel good. I'm feeling really good. I'm not going to make any pronouncements just yet. But the things you have to worry about, right, are like I guess everybody just kind of feeling good or feeling themselves too much. Or like, eh, we're the greatest team. We won a national championship because we beat Arkansas. Well, no, you haven't. we're literally 0-0 in conference play, right? FIU has two conference wins or something like that. And then FIU actually looks pretty good over there in the East. They beat up on Massachusetts yesterday. Scored 63. FIU is 1-0 in conference. Charlotte is 1-0 in conference. Those teams are actually on the way towards getting to the conference title game, which I think for me is a goal. I want a conference title game. I want a conference title. I care less about a bowl game because I think that a conference title means something. It means you know, here are the stakes. You beat the teams in front of you. You knew who you were going to play this whole time. There are no surprises, right? You knew that USM, UTEP, UTSA, Southern Miss were all going to be on a schedule. You lined up, you beat them, and you knew one of these seven teams were going to be out of the East. You lined up, you beat them. Here's your title, right? I think that has more cachet at this point to me than a random bowl game against a Troy, against, you know, what have you. And also, you can control it. You know what I mean? Like, I think hosting a conference title game in Apogee would be a crowning achievement, and you know, that would be huge. And I think I'm looking forward to that more than I am looking forward to, again, a random bowl game in a random city someplace. You know, look, I'm not excited to go to Shreveport about anything, for anything, for any reason at this moment right now. So it'd be great if there's a bowl game. They're like, hey, you get to come out to the what bowl is that again? The
Independence Bowl.
There you go, Independence Bowl. Or, you know, what have you. New Orleans was fun. I went. It was fun. It was a good time. Heart of Dallas Bowl was fun. It was great. But I don't want to get my marching orders, you know, two weeks into December. Like, hey, turns out you're going to, you know, you're going to Shreveport, buddy. And I'm like, God, do they even have roads out there to Shreveport? I don't even know. I like randomly taking pot shots against smaller cities. It is one of my favorite games. Does all that make sense? And how much do you agree with me, if at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of – bowl season is weird to me now. It's a lot different than when I grew up. And then just the past
wait,
years –
wait, you're talking like you're, you know, like you're 45 or something like that. I mean –
Yeah, I mean
– back in my day when there was three bowls.
Yeah, the number of bowl games now, and then the way that the college football playoff has kind of pushed out the significance of every other bowl, for people who are maybe even younger than me, that don't know, it used to be a time where there was no BCS and there were no quote national championship games. It was just everybody played in a bowl game, and then the cards kind of fell as they fell after they were all done, and people ranked teams how they felt fit. It was just kind of like pseudo national championships. Then the BCS obviously came in and created a BCS national champion. But anyways, my point is just the way bowl season is now, it's so unpredictable. So few opportunities come along for a G5 school to actually play a P5 school and to even play in a noteworthy bowl. So for that reason, I'm 100% with you on the conference championship. That to me is the biggest thing. Win the conference championship, and then if you are one of those teams that gets to go to the New Year's Six Bowl, then that's huge because you do get to play on a big stage. But you know, it's just that's what we can do. That's what we can control. We saw with Central Florida last year that they didn't get to have any say. Or maybe they did. They crowned themselves national champions, which was pretty cool. But that was it. I mean, that was literally the absolute best outcome they could have hoped for last year. They won every game, for the most part, decidedly. They beat Auburn, who had beaten both of the national championship. They literally beat the team that beat both of the national championship contending teams, or the teams in the national championship game.
Yeah.
So from the whole transitive win standpoint, they couldn't have worked any better for them. And so for me, short of that happening, I think the best thing is just winning your conference and winning your division, like you said, hosting the conference title game, and then winning it. Going forward, I think that is absolutely the goal. In the current structure of college football, I think that's kind of what you need to aim for at this point, as far as things that you can control.
So I don't mean to burst anybody's bubble, but I think it did come up yesterday, and I was chatting with a few other folks about this, and that's the question of whether or not we get to keep Seth Luttrell. I don't know what his whole situation is or what he's looking for, but I think the general consensus from everybody I talked to is that this is a temporary gig. He's looking for bigger and better, and I don't really blame him for that. I mean, I think having your ceiling be the Conference USA title game that you host at Apogee Stadium is not really what guys get into coaching dream of, right? They want to be in a national title game, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, as long as like Ren Baker and all the administration, and I don't even know how long Ren Baker is for you know, North Texas world either. But as long as these guys are doing everything they can to make sure that North Texas gets as far as it can get, as far as it's possible to get, then, you know, once they reach that limit, and then Seth Luttrell says, well, I've done all I can here, it's time to move on, right? Lincoln Riley is going to, you know, he's moving on to the Browns, and so now I will take over at Oklahoma or something like that. I don't know. Those are just all whispers. I think what's important, I think maybe the key here is the president of the university, because he made essentially both of those hires, Ren Baker, Seth Luttrell, and you know, he's the one okaying and moving on. And if you talk to longtime North Texas fans and things, they talk about how the administration didn't really support the athletic department, The athletic department, therefore, couldn't really, you know, pay the coaches, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it takes a whole team. I just read something about Tom Herman saying, you know, coaches win games, but administrations win championships, and I think that's very true. I like where this program is going. I don't think it's there yet. They're building an indoor practice facility, but it's not built yet, right? They're doing a lot of things, but I think there's a lot of room for improvement, and it could very quickly go awry. But I like where this program is going. I don't know. What do you think? How long, reasonably? Let's say we win conference title game, right, this year, right? We host Seth Luttrell. Does he stay for senior season for Mason Fine?
You know, one of the things I've been talking about the last couple of years, because this whole Seth Luttrell leaving North Texas rumor has pretty much been there since day one. Day one, people were saying, this is a, 37, 38-year-old, you know, hotshot rising coach who could come in here and win a bunch of games, and then he's got ties at, you know, a bunch of P5 schools that he's coached at or played at and guys he's coached with. So it was kind of like, it made sense that this was just kind of a, this was not going to be a permanent thing for him. And I wouldn't really want it to be a permanent thing, truthfully, because that probably means that things are not going as well as they could, save for maybe Gary Patterson. That just doesn't happen at a G5 school, which I guess they're really not even a G5 school anymore, and they haven't been as long as G5 has been a thing. But you know, I'm fine with it. I'm 100%, because if he leaves, I think that puts us in a great situation. You know, President Smotrisk, that's huge what he's done, because, like you said, administrations are huge. Back in the, you know, whenever we hired Todd Dodge, from what I heard, the big reason why we hired Todd Dodge, or why we didn't, I guess, have more money to hire a coach, was because the president, Gretchen Bataille, I don't know if you say her name, at the time, was she didn't want a football coach being paid higher than the president of the university. So that hamstrung the opportunities of coaches that we could hire. And I don't want to get into too much of the Todd Dodge era, but I will say that that wasn't that big a deal back then, because he was still, I think, in the top 4 or 5 paid coaches in the Sun Belt at the time.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like that was just egregiously underpaid amount for
We didn't get an intern over here to coach. Yeah, we paid him some money. Yeah,
I agree. Right. So, but now that's just impossible in the current landscape to, I guess, pay a coach. And have really decent results or decent pickings. But if he leaves, I think we're in great hands. Honestly, the last, like you said, that was pretty much Smotrisk, and then he was letting RV run around and do the interviews. But Smotrisk made that hire, and with Ren Baker in place now, if they could make a hire together with the program at where it's at now compared to where it was in 2015, I have no reason to believe that they wouldn't make another good hire that would be able to keep this thing going. I don't think they need a perfect hire to continue to win games, because North Texas, I just always felt like there's bad athletic director problems, bad administration problems for the athletic program in general. But I always felt like if we could just have a good system in place, then North Texas should be really, to me, the premier team in Conference USA, especially in Conference USA West, for football and basketball, really. And I think there's a chance that is finally happened this year, in year 3 of the Ren Baker era. So, like I said, it's just, this is a great spot for any prospective coach to step into. So, and if Seth Luttrell, or for that same reason, if Seth Luttrell doesn't get that perfect opportunity, he could easily stay here and kind of keep building things. And I think that might be more of the situation that happens. If Seth Luttrell doesn't have a perfect opportunity, I think he stays and he gets probably a pretty big raise. But, you know, like last year with Central Florida, Scott Frost left them to go to his alma mater, Nebraska. That kind of played out, timed out perfectly for him. If Nebraska doesn't, if that coaching job isn't open, maybe Scott Frost is still at Central Florida. Same for Seth Luttrell. If that perfect opportunity doesn't come, he has, you know, no reason to leave. He's going to make plenty of money regardless in his coaching career and next year. So I think, you know, for now, if you're North Texas, just continue to pay him, continue to fatten that buyout for when that day does come, if it does. And then just continue to make this an appealing job for Luttrell and any other prospective coach so that he has, like I said, he only leaves if it's the perfect opportunity. He isn't just looking for just any step up to any P5 school that offers him.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds silly to say, but that is how you should do anything, right? Like, if you have a company and you want to hire somebody, you make it appealing and desirable to talented people, right? You pay well, you give good perks, and you make it easy to do your job and make it easy to be successful at your job, right? I mean, whether you're like a CPA or program, you know, an application developer to a football coach, you know, to get the best talent, you want to make it desirable. And yeah, I mean, if the money's right, I mean, he's not going to make $7 million here, but $1 million is not terrible. You know, you can live a nice life on $1 million a year. And, you know, like, as long as, hey, you can go out there and win, we're going to give you the resources to win, to go recruit, to win at this level. Hey, this is a great job. Just totally, you know, speculating here. I'd like to see Graham Harrell get the gig if that were the case, but I think maybe Graham Harrell moves on. Also maybe with Latrell or something like that. Like I said, I liked Eric Morris. I think he's going to do good at Incarnate Word. I don't know. These are just random thoughts off the top of my head. And nobody's going to pay me for my opinion on these coaches. And I wouldn't even pay me for my opinion on these coaches. But yeah, I like where we are. And I think, you know, I was thinking about Western Kentucky winning the title game a couple seasons ago, or even FAU last year, and they didn't really have anybody at their game. I think we get 30,000 plus, even, you know, maybe exceed official capacity at Apogee Stadium if we are hosting a conference title game. And I think that speaks to a number of things, but maybe it's a little bit that unlocking the potential of North Texas football. Because I agree, this, you know, everybody talks about how North Texas could be a sleeping giant. And for a long time, I think we were getting in our own way, whether that was administration, you know, from the president on down to the coaching staff. I don't know. You know, like I said, you can speculate, we can speculate, and I have my opinions, and I think it was administration. But some of that's the donors, too. Like, I mean, it's all moving in the right direction, right? Everybody's pointing fingers, but right now we have a staff that knows how to win football games. We have players that believe and are playing hard. We got administration from the president to the athletic director that know how to sell the team, right? It's refreshing to see them say, hey, that was a big win. Not only was it a win to sell, but to say, hey, let's get you out here writing you a check. Let's make sure you're getting your season tickets, you know, capturing the audience when it's, you know, selling time, making them sign on the line, which is dotted. And, you know, putting into place things that are going to make it possible to be successful at North Texas in the future. And that's great. It's great to see. It's a wonderful time to be a Mean Green fan, ain't it? When was the last time? I was thinking about this. When was the last time we felt this good? I think, was it maybe post, was it 2013 that we felt like, hey, will you be pretty good now?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question, because 2013, it was such a senior heavy team, and I think people who paid attention to recruiting would have seen that recruiting wasn't going great, to the point where it was like, oh yeah, just lose players and we're do the whole reload, not rebuild thing. we weren't in that situation back then, so it was a weird time to kind of describe how excited we were about the future. I think the last time we felt this good was probably then, if you factor in that UNLV win on January 1st in the Cotton Bowl. That day was really cool.
Yes.
But kind of the projection going forward was not as fun as it is to do right now.
Well, I made a lot of comparisons and made a lot of talk about this, but going into that Texas game, right? Because we opened the season at Texas, and that was what's his face, his first year, Charlie Strong.
Yeah,
I thought Texas was very beatable, and I think the next week they got beat up by BYU or something like that. They're very beatable if we played, you know, like, I don't think that North Texas team was as good as this one, right, on a lot of sides of the ball. But if you remember, the defense forced a turnover, we got a touchdown. We held them. We made it tough on them. I think David Ash, you know, escaped and made some plays. But they were not just beating the brakes off of us. A lot of the situation was the offense just, I think we threw two interceptions. We couldn't move the ball at all. Like, if we had an offense that could do some things, I think we beat Texas. And I think then maybe recruiting, you know, jump starts, because that's the easier sell. Like, hey, we beat Texas, y'all. You know what I mean? Why go to Texas where you're going to lose to us? Come over here to North Texas where you could win. You can play in DKR, Texas Royal Memorial Stadium, and get wins, but do it in green. And, you know, I think that loss killed a lot of momentum. And, just the whole way the quarterback situation played out that season and into the next year when it began with no quarterback, basically. That killed it. And I think that speaks to how quickly things can change, right? You look at any of these schools. Like, look at FAU, right? Riding high, undefeated in conference. Everybody was talking, like, the day before the season started, everybody was talking about FAU. And, you know, mere 3 weeks later, everybody's talking about North Texas and FAU fans. The most talkative and confident bunch that I've seen on Twitter in a long time are now like, I don't know if we can beat you guys. This is going to be tough. I don't know if we have it, the juice this year. That's how quickly any of this can change. So I'm enjoying it. I think that means enjoy it and doesn't mean, like, don't get too high. It means enjoy it, because I'm not on the team. You know what I mean? I don't need to go to practice. I don't need to do any push-ups. I just get to enjoy it. So that's the great part. It can quickly change. I feel good about this whole thing. But, again, some of this was expected. I felt like we could beat Arkansas. I didn't think it was going to be that much of an ask. I didn't expect 44-17.
Yeah, if you're listening to this, unless you're a player, coach, or in some way involved with the team, just know that you're allowed to look ahead on the schedule. You're allowed to do any other various thing that players and coaches are not allowed to do. You're even allowed to think that we might go undefeated. Sorry, I wasn't supposed to say that word in this podcast. I don't know, but you're allowed to do those things because you're not playing. So enjoy it. You know, if that makes you happy, or you like doing that kind of stuff, then just do it. I mean, it's until you get to have a direct outcome in the game, then you're allowed to do that. So, it's a fun time, and there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to kind of enjoy it in that regard, if that's what you want to do.
I agree. I think the only thing that concerns me about that, the talk, is that usually it's people that don't know Conference USA. Like, I have been a little scared of Louisiana Tech this whole time, and I've laid out all the reasons on other podcasts and on some blog posts. And again, I'm still a little concerned about FAU, because just last year, they have a lot of the same dudes. They have Motor Singletary. They have Al Shire on the other side of the ball. Yeah. Like, they're good. And, I mean, I think on their day, you get that FAU team from that whooped us in the conference title game. You drop them into Fayetteville. And I think they do the same thing to Arkansas. So, how many teams?
Yeah, I think FAU, I'm really interested about Louisiana Tech, because I've heard you kind of tout that as probably one of our biggest games on our schedule as far as losability, if that's a word. But not sure about it. I think talent wise they have recruited well over the years, and Jamar Smith is on paper probably one of the better quarterbacks. I didn't see it from them last year in the game that we played, even though they almost beat us. I was watching that game just thinking, like any time this dude is just like any kind of pressured, he doesn't know what to do. And he's a redshirt junior, so he's even been in college a year longer than Mason Fine. And I just felt like from a developmental standpoint as a quarterback, he looks so far behind Fine, just in terms of knowing what to do. So I don't know. I mean, he's still getting better, but and that team is as well. They have players And luckily we get them at home. If that game were in Ruston, I might be a little bit more on board with that. But and I do agree that it is probably one of the more daunting foes we have left. But I'm really interested to see if they can put up points against us, because that offense didn't look very good to me last year, and our defense is just so much better now. I'm really interested to see if they can put up enough points to keep up with Fine.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with all that. I mean, obviously, our defense has improved and showed in the last 3 weeks that they're one of the better teams in the conference, maybe even the best defense in the conference. I mean, just by numbers, yeah. I guess some of my responses to that. They have talent. Their receiver, was it Veal, right? Teddy Veal, he's talented.
Yeah.
And I'm always, when teams match up well against each other, or just they're just kind of even, I always look at the talent. Like, who can make a play that shouldn't be made, right? Like, the Colorado State dude, one reason I was talking about Preston Williams and how good he was is that KJ Carter Samuels would just be like, oh, I'm in pressure, let me throw it up to my 6'6", five-star wide receiver, right? And he would just beat the dude one-on-one and make a play that, you know, like, everything's right, my hands are right, I'm step-for-step with this dude. Turns out that he's just bigger, stronger, faster than me and has freakish athletic ability, so I lose, right? I think Jamar Smith has some, you know, mobility, and you know he has some kind of talent. I thought some of their offensive struggles last year were because of injuries and just the change that happens when you lose your top two wide receivers. I think they got like 80% of their targets. I think I looked at that. So now you're just trying to get on the same page with these other dudes. I think that had a lot to do with it. So you know, like I said, I was just concerned about their talent. Jaquizz Dancy, he's a good player, but I think now our defense is better and they match up better, and I don't know that anybody could stop this offense to go down and score 30 points a game. I still have concerns about our offense, and you used to be able to say the same thing about Mason Fine. Like, get him under pressure and he doesn't always make the right throw, right? He would do that thing where he'd roll out and throw an interception down the sideline, right? And that's what he did like twice against UTSA in 2 years. I mean, you know, so yeah, every quarterback is a little is less of a quarterback when you have a guy rushing in the face.
Sure.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think now, on balance, we're the better team. But I'm still concerned about Louisiana Tech. And, you know, they gave South Carolina a run for the money last year, right? And we're talking about teams that could beat an SEC team. They led them, and it required a miracle South Carolina drive in the final seconds to win that game. So, you know, like, that's what I'm saying, is I think in terms of programs that have been there, hey, this is a team that's won 4 straight bowl games. And I think to complete they've won every bowl game that Dallas-Fort Worth has to offer except the Cotton Bowl. And they might even have won that if the Cotton Bowl invites them to it, you know. But, yeah, they concern me just because of that. They beat the brakes off SMU.
Does give them
they
a
beat
nice
us.
Added element that they didn't have last year. I don't know if anyone's aware of this, but Jaquizz Dancy, the running back from Louisiana Tech, actually had cancer. It was going through cancer treatment last year, I think. So
yeah.
I don't know if it was last season or kind of before that, but he's kind of made a pretty miraculous recovery.
Yeah, it's incredible.
He is absolutely one of the better running backs that we'll see this year. I think he does give them an added element. So that is another, I guess, kind of tally for them that I kind of, just going off of last year's film, gives them a little bit of a leg up there. But yeah, so that does, and a couple more receivers have kind of stood out for them this year. So, you know, it is an offense that could present problems. I'm interested to see Jamar Smith this year and how big a leap he's taken.
Yeah, college football and football in general is about the quarterback. And yeah, so he's going to be dangerous. Speaking of quarterbacks, Buckshot Calvert he's a good quarterback for Liberty. That's the next game. That's on the road. I feel confident in that one. I don't know they've even published the lines yet. I think North Texas is favored in that one, maybe even pretty heavily. And I agree with everything you said about us being favored pretty much the rest of the way. Let's be excited, and let's end this podcast. Do you have anything else to say? You want to throw anything else out, Billy?
No, just... I guess one quick plug. If I know Adam helps cover basketball as well. Him and Greg do a good job. Me and Eric EV Heydrich on Twitter, UNT sports fan, NTO3 formerly known as, We got a basketball podcast starting up that we've done one episode. So if you're into basketball, I think that might be similarly fun this year as well to football. We're going to be starting up.
Is it North Texas related basketball podcast?
Yes, North Texas. It's called the Green Globe Podcast. We did one episode back in July, and then we're going to get going back again in October. So if you're looking for more basketball coverage, we should have some there as well.
Sweet. Yeah, I think I don't know how I'm going to do this. Like, I think some of you know that I started Conference USA Report just because I was dissatisfied with the level of Conference USA coverage. And that one, I mean, like, right now it's been me because a couple of the other guys are like, yeah, I'm totally in. They're like, oh, I can't because of commitments. So right now they're just me on there. So if you like hearing me, you can do that too. I don't know how I'm going to cover basketball on that thing, especially when it's just me. Yeah, I think Conference USA has one of the better basketball program. Roster of teams. And I think we were, what are we, like sixth or something like that? We're somewhere in like the total rankings of conference of leagues in NCAA. We were towards the top. I forget the number, so this is a terrible anecdote, but it's a long way of saying that Conference USA should be good, and there's reason to believe that North Texas basketball will be one of the better teams. Does that make sense? Would you agree with that?
100%.
Yeah. Who are you most excited about on our squad right now?
Basketball?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, obvious answer is Roosevelt Smart, but there's a lot. It's kind of cool because we have pretty much most of our guys who did anything last year back, and then we've also got like six new guys because we had three guys redshirting, and then we had a couple guys leave who were kind of end of the bench guys. So it's like we've got a really good squad coming back, plus we have a lot of additions, which is just a really good combination. And I think it's going to make for a really fun season as well.
Yeah, I like that. It was very Marvel-esque, the tournament, the college basketball invitational.
CBI.
Tournament. Yeah. It was like after the trailer kind of thing. Like, the season ended against Louisiana Tech, tough loss. But then it was like, what is this here? Just all of a sudden, like, this is how we're going to be. This is the way this team's going to play. It's going to play fast and up-tempo, shoot a lot of threes, and we're going to make a lot of threes. What's his name? He's like, now I'm going to shoot with my right hand, turns out Miller. Yeah, turns out I'm going to be a right-handed shooter and make all the threes ever. So I like that turn.
Take note, Ben Simmons.
that turn, it was just kind of like, what? And he got everybody excited about what the team could be. So
it was pretty cool driving to a game in Denton in late March. That was different.
Yeah.
But also cool.
Yeah. It was shades of what it used to be back when the Super Pit was full. And I remember sitting in there thinking like, this is probably one of the better college basketball venues, available. I mean, I've been to a handful, and I think especially at this tier, like Sun Belt level at the time, or even Conference USA level, you get like a couple, like some of the East Coast ones. I think Old Dominion has a really nice arena. I think the Western Kentucky does too. But the Super Pit is not a bad place to watch basketball. It's kind of a weird level, but there's nothing blocking your view. You can watch some good basketball there. When it's rocking, it feels it's pretty amazing. So I'm looking forward to that also. All right, cool. What's your show called again? The Green Globe?
Green Globe Podcast.
Green Globe. Is it on? Can we find it anywhere on iTunes?
It's on Libsyn right now. I don't really have everything set up for it yet because we just kind of did one kind of pilot run. If anyone's interested, you can either find me on Go Mean Green or on Twitter at Billy Sierra 16. If you're interested, just let me know, and I can kind of shoot you the link of where we're at right now. So we only got one episode in, but stay tuned.
I like how this is it's like very old mixtape, like you're just handing out in the back of your trunk.
Yeah,
just 100%. Like, here you go. Here's a CD. Yeah, it's my podcast. Don't worry about it. It's really amazing. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening, and thanks to everybody that was listening live. I didn't get to check to see how many of y'all were out here listening, but I know we had more than just my mom, which is always nice, right? Appreciate y'all. Don't forget to log on to MeanGreenNation.com/members You know, sign up for a membership. It's $3 for one, and $30 for the year. I try to give you like some perks and things. Like when we sold T-shirts, I gave everybody that subscribed like a discount. When I did the season preview ebook, everybody that subscribes, they got it free. So I know, like Billy wrote a section on that, and I was going to give him a cut of it. And I know I just ate into all of his cut because I know a handful of people, you know, use their membership. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to read this thing for free. You know, I try to throw out some perks everywhere. The whole idea is to keep it going and not to put it behind a paywall and not to give you like, ooh, spammy links. Who is out here? A recruit signed up? Find out now. Money. Sign. Like, I mean, no. We want to keep it going, but you got to pay for it so that way it exists. And, you know, I don't have to shut it down because I'm broke. I mean, the more people sign, get interested, it, more weight, more load on the server, so then I have to, you know, it costs me more money. These are just the facts of life. You know it. You know, you went to college in North Texas. You guys are familiar with this stuff. But aside from that, I mean, good times, guys. Good times all around. Thanks for jumping on the show, Billy. We're going to have you on again to talk about recruiting, especially when as December rolls around and we hit the first signing day. Anything else? Anything else? No? All right, no, ladies and gentlemen.
Sounds good. Hopefully we'll have a good, nice class to kind of talk about being signed heading into our New Year's Six bowl game.
Are we still number one in the 24/7 composite rankings?
Yes,
in,
we are.
In the league, right? Where are we nationally? 54th or something?
54th, yeah.
Good times. Good times in Denton. All right, guys. Thanks again. And we're done.